You know, there's a reason for cautionary tales.
Then why don't more people heed their warnings?
I don't know. But after they hear my new show, they will think twice.
Oh yeah? About what?
Eating Tide Pods, playing with Ouija boards, talking to Karens, you name it. If you should heed caution, we're talking about it.
Check out Harper's brand new podcast, Cautionary Tales with Harper. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download podcasts.
And be sure to press subscribe and give us a review.
Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Subscribe wherever you download podcasts today.
Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, what do you do when you have to visit the hoarding hell house of a loved one? And oh yeah, it's haunted. That's today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. You can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And, of course, if you like the program, you want to keep us on the air, we would love your support as an EPP, as we call them, Extra Podcast Person. When you become an Extra Podcast Person, you get advanced episodes of the show, commercial-free. You get access to our full archive of episodes. You also get EPP bonus episodes, which are exclusive to our EPP members. They come out once a week, and you get access to the full archive of those as well. 320-some, 30-some of them available to you when you sign up at ghostpodcast.com. Or if you prefer Patreon, it's a great platform there, patreon.com/realghoststories. It's only $5 a month, or you can sign up for the annual membership, get 1 month free when you do that. You can do that at either ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Both platforms now offer the annual membership, which is quite nice. So there's some ways to support the program, get some extra stuff, and help keep us on the air. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hi.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. We are recording this in the middle of October. Well, October 20th. And I'm well aware this is airing on November 4th, the day that probably a lot of folks are waking up. And my guess would be going, what happened last night? And you know what? You're not going to find out on this show. And we're not even going to fucking talk about it. And we're not going to bother you because you're being bombarded with it every damn place you go. And if you're coming here for an escape, welcome.
Well, we have no idea what's going to happen. We don't see the future.
Well, sometimes we do. And I do know the future on this one, but I'm just going to hold it back. I'm kidding. I have no idea. Welcome. If you're looking for an escape from all of the insanity of our world, you got it. We got ghost stories, tons of them here for you today. And if you have a ghost story, we would love to hear it. 855-853-4802 is our number to call in yours. So you're welcome to do that. Sometimes if you're stressed either way, not making any political statements here, but if you're stressed either way, you just kind of want to get your mind off of something. Think into your life. Think into your ghost stories that you've experienced throughout life and pick up the phone, make the call, and relive a ghost story on the air. And then cry yourself to sleep.
No, it's therapeutic. You won't cry yourself
to
sleep.
No, it is. It is. I mean, and it gets your mind off into another world other than everything we've been bombarded with, I'm sure over the last several weeks. I'm assuming the election took place yesterday as we record this on the 20th, but it's 2020, so who the fuck knows?
You know? Oh, that's scary to think about.
So that's the assumption I'm making these statements on, is that the election actually took place. But I don't know the answer. But anyway, we're here to talk about ghosts. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to our first letter of the day. It says, hey guys, I had a few paranormal experiences in my life, and I strongly believe in energy and spirits. My grandmother died from stage 4 lung cancer when I was just 12 years old in January of 2012, turning 13 in April. We were emptying out her house. My grandmother was a hoarder. She always said, there isn't a damn thing in here that I don't need or want. It ranged from years and years worth of birthday, holiday cards, office supplies, tons of clothes, lots of old knickknacks, like this Elvis Presley Elmo that played his own guitar, a bunch of old school stuff. Well, at 12 years old, I did not really want to spend all day cleaning the house and going through all the grandma's old junk. But at that age, I did not understand that the house was going to be foreclosed on because my mom's siblings were fighting over everything since my grandma made my mom head of her estate because my aunt is a greedy, money-hungry bitch and my uncle is a predator. My other two uncles are crackheads. They pawned most of their belongings for meth. The predator, who knows what he did with his parts, and my aunt sold precious sentimental items to strangers for a quick buck. We had to get the house empty so her stuff would not be trashed or stolen. I was walking down the hallway, which had one door on the left side at the end that was my grandma's room, and two doors on the right side. One of my twin crackhead uncles that were kicked out before she died, and the bathroom in the middle at the end of the hall. I was mumbling to myself that I don't get why she has all this. She has too much. It's all junk. But my grandma sure had an attitude and a funny way of expressing it. Standing at 5 foot and 85 pounds, if she was soaking wet with permed red hair, she still scared even the toughest truck driver. As I was walking into the bathroom, I passed the door just to the right and the door was open. This candle one of my crackhead uncles had given one Christmas that was on a shelf, perfectly stable for however many years, flies off the shelf and nearly hits me immediately. I was like, I'm sorry, I did not mean it. And I ran and told my mom to come and see, and she saw the candle lying on the floor and looks at the shelf that was secured by screws in the wall and says she always hated that candle. That is her way of saying, I don't have a damn thing in this house that I don't want or need. I have a few other stories I want to share. I hope that somebody will enjoy this, and thank you for taking the time to hear my story.
Well, she had one thing she didn't want or need, and that was that candle.
Yeah.
But that's kind of scary that it went flying at the author, you know, because it's like that, I don't know.
Kind of shows some aggression.
Yeah, yeah. That makes me wonder if it was the grandmother or not, because I wouldn't think a grandmother would throw a candle at her grandchild, especially one that's got their stuff together. Maybe one of the crackheads or the predator, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, hit the predator right in the head. That'd be great. Right in the temple. Gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. The assumption that we get so often when it comes to a haunted house right after someone passes is that it is the person who died that is haunting that house. Quite often, it's not. And I understand the assumption being made that way. That would be somewhat logical when we're talking about a subject that many consider illogical. But the thing is, this is a house that was surrounded by negativity, that was surrounded by mental illness and issues, and really was probably just a hotbed of negative energy. And untreated issues, and someone who is clearly suffering. Anyone who is living in that horde, they may be telling you on the surface they're fine with it, but deep down that person is not happy. They need help. And she obviously was unable to get it in her lifetime. So that sadness, that anger, all of that could very easily, I think, either have attracted something else negative into that house, or somehow the manifestation of the energy that was there gets triggered, gets energized, and you have bursts of energy here and there that sometimes just are released into the atmosphere. And that's where you sometimes, I think, get poltergeist type activity that's not necessarily a conscious energy, but it's more like a balloon popping.
Yeah.
It's like, this is planted there, this is there, it popped, boom, there's this energy, and it's enough energy to move something, and we automatically assume something consciously did that. So I don't know if that's what's going on in the house. I don't know that it's grandma chucking a candle at you or trying to make any sort of statement, but clearly there's going to be a lot of sad, dark energy in that house that, you know, I know if whoever goes into there and tries to clean it up, even with everything gone, is going to take quite a bit of time and positivity to change the energy of that home.
I kind of wonder sometimes if ghosts are like, oh, this house just came on the market. The person just died and they aren't a ghost. So we could totally move in there and be the ghost and they're just going to assume we're grandma.
I think sometimes you may have that.
Maybe that's what's going on.
Would it be a nefarious intent or would it be just, they're just going to think we're grandma and they're going to leave us alone?
Yeah. More so that, except until you're starting to throw candles at the grandkids and then you realize, oh, grandma would never have done that.
Do you think there's a real estate industry on the other side for people that are coming over? There's like ghost realtors who are like, well, this one just died. So you're well, this one's open and they show you around and then.
I don't know.
Like, oh, I like this house, but it kind of, I don't know. I don't know about the architecture and I can't change it because I'm dead. But you're right. The family that seems to be coming in here, they seem pretty susceptible to my haunting activity or they don't have the empathic ability or they don't have the ability to sense anything. So this would be a great place for us to hang out.
I wouldn't say like a full-fledged, here, let me go show you the latest house where somebody died.
Yeah.
But more so, it's almost like they know that the living person that lived there is no longer there, and so the house is available for haunting.
Yeah. It's not like Century 21 on the other side.
No, or Remax. No.
Remax 666 or something.
No.
Century 666. Yeah. I wonder about those things. I wonder how organized things are on the other side in terms of people having roles and jobs and assisting others who have passed over, because we hear so many stories of people who have passed over, and sometimes they seem to be working in tandem with each other and helping each other out. Sometimes children who pass or adults who passed who didn't have any relation in their lifetime, but almost like adoptively help out each other on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. And one of the more interesting things that I've been hearing in the last year or so on the Grave Talks, other podcasts that I do from investigators, is this term of someone on the other side who is acting like an engineer or an operator for communicating with the other side through specific devices. There are many people who use ghost boxes and some other equipment to communicate with the other side, and they swear that there is a specific engineer. I forget the term that they use. If it's engineer, it's not operator. I don't know if engineer is the right word, but it's someone on the other side that literally it is their job to get that communication from this side and then reach out to who's ever on that side and say, so-and-so wants to try and communicate with you. And they will actually, there's recordings of this where it's like, is this so-and-so? And they have names. And it keeps coming back with the same name. And I'd like to speak to so-and-so. Can you get them? And sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes the answer is no.
A reverse medium almost?
Almost, or an operator. I mean, the most simplistic way of explaining it is an old school operator at a switchboard.
Yeah, except they're on that side with the other mm-hmm. dead saying, I have so-and-so coming through.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And that's what a medium does on this side.
Yeah, it's almost like a reverse version of it.
Okay.
And it's like, that's their job. That's it's playing a role on the other side almost as intently as we are trying to communicate. And some people try to communicate on this side with that side. It seems as though there's a group on that side that are just as interested in communicating back this way. And I wonder if that's a product of the times and a product of just this being something that people have been so interested in for 20, 30 years now. Even longer than that, but in terms of technology and using technology to be on a Ouija board and things like that, that the technology now exists, that on that side, they see it exists too. And they thought, well, now, heck, if I can manipulate this, because now you brought me this piece of equipment, I'm going to help you. I'm going to make this my role on this side, and I'm going to help you communicate just as you're trying to communicate. Where in the past, those forms didn't necessarily exist to connect with. It'd be like having for the last up until like 19 or like 2000 something, you just having a play telephone, mm-hmm. but it goes nowhere. It's not connected to anything. There's no operator on the other side. There's no telephone service. Now it's like, okay, we have the telephone on this side. And guess what? There's a telephone company over on that side. And now that the two exist, they seem to start to work in tandem together as a group, as a collective. And it's very interesting to see this because we're in the infancy of some of these things working that way very directly.
Yeah.
Beyond a Ouija board, that as these sort of things improve, I really wonder, and I thought it was a crazy idea when I first heard about it, but having talked to so many people who use these things and they've shown me evidence and stuff, I would not be surprised if by the end of our lives, assuming we live to be, you know, 70, 80 some years old, you know, that there will be some sort of communication that is really clear. Super. Right now it's cloudy at best, but where it's almost having a one-on-one conversation on an almost on-demand basis.
Yeah.
Now that's going to throw the world into some sort, you know, you'll always have your believers and unbelievers, but if it gets so darn clear and unexplainable in terms of, you know, our current logic, you're going to throw religions into a mess. You're going to throw so many belief systems into a mess, or maybe just a reevaluation of how we've interpreted things. And maybe we reinterpret them a little bit differently as well. This doesn't necessarily have to work against someone's religion or belief system, but maybe just go and say, maybe we didn't understand it as clear as we thought we did. And because this clearly is something is coming through without a doubt.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting.
It is very interesting. And you can't, I mean, as far out as that sounds, you think about it, people have to do stuff to stay occupied. Yeah. And when they die, they probably still have to do stuff to stay occupied.
Yeah. That's what my guess would be. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm on the other side, you're damn right I will be sitting here trying to get on the podcast.
I know. You'll be podcasting to the dead.
Me and Harper have already worked out a plan where I'm going to try and do the show with her as the co-host while I'm dead. So that'll be fun.
So concerned about that.
What?
That you're already plotting this with our 8-year-old.
Well, she brought it up.
So that makes it okay?
It makes it okay.
Okay.
But we're all good. We're like, you know, it's all, you know, someday she's like, you know, if I'm taking over the show, and then it'd be great if you could still come on, you know, sometimes, and we'll figure it out. Huh. So there you go. I'll work on it from the other side.
Okay.
Why not? 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our next story. It says, my dad was a creative guy that liked to tinker and build things in his spare time. When I was a kid, my dad built a beautiful grandfather clock, which became one of his prized possessions, no pun intended. A few years before he died, he went out of town for a week or two, entrusting the nightly, delicate ritual of winding the clock to my stepmother, who stayed behind. If the heavy weights were allowed to reach the bottom of the chains on which they hung, they would overtax the spring in the timekeeping mechanism. My dad's greatest fear in entrusting this task to anyone else. Just as he feared, this is exactly what happened. He was furious to discover on his return that his beloved clock was broken. He tried on several occasions to have the clock repaired, but the answer was always the same. It was broken for good. It stayed that way for several years before my dad died. The clock was handed down to my sister and sat regal yet silent in her living room. Meanwhile, I started a cleaning business and my sister hired me to maintain her house. One of the things I loved about cleaning people's homes was picking up on heavy, dark, or stuck energies from the space and objects in it and shifting them into someplace positive, light, and supportive. I experimented a lot with different space clearing techniques and would often ask for assistance from unseen beings as I went about my work. On this day, I began the job of cleaning my sister's house by spending a few moments addressing my dad's spirit and asking for his help. I was extremely worried about my sister, how she was increasingly isolating herself, knowing she was having serious issues with addiction, anger, and depression. She herself was stuck. I began dusting the grandfather clock as I was speaking in my head to my dad, asking him to guide me and show me the best way to support my sister. I carefully cleaned the face of the clock and opened the door and polished the glass. I thanked my dad and moved on through the room, dusting the perimeter. When I reached the other side of the room, I was startled to hear the clock behind me play its full song and chime several times loudly, as if to punctuate what clearly felt like my dad's presence. I had not heard this in years. This familiar melody that inserted itself through my entire childhood in 15-minute intervals. I was frozen for a moment. I had not noticed that it was working when I arrived. I had not noticed when I cleaned it. I guess I must have just been distracted. I thought I observed closely, the pendulum swinging rhythmically. All fully wound, widgets visible, high atop their chains. The time was slightly off, but it was working. My sister must have found someone that could finally fix it. It all made me happy. After some time, I shrugged and went back to finish the rest of the house. Later that evening, I heard from my sister, "The house feels so good, and oh my God, you fixed the clock." I responded, "No, I didn't. I cleaned it, but that was it." "But you hung the weights and stuff and reset it," she said. "No, I didn't do any of that. I just cleaned it. I did not mention that I also talked to it at length or why." "But," she stammered, "you must have. The weights were wrapped up in towels at the bottom of the clock." Holy shit, I was stunned. How could it be this 15-pound weights lifted themselves up, attached them to the chains, and began running again after all this time? In some ways, this makes perfect sense. My dad was an extraordinarily strong guy with his presence, tenacity, and physique. He had an epic life story which began in a dirt floor log cabin, an orphanage, a war, and ended up an engineer, doctor, pilot, artist, and historian with love for travel, inventing, dreaming big, and hard work. He hated the word impossible and would go to great lengths to accomplish tasks other people did not believe possible. Even still, I have to say I was impressed that day with the clock. A few years later, my sister also died, just a day after I bought my house. And recently, her daughter gave me the clock. The weights did not arrive with the rest of it, but I'm looking forward to getting it all put back together. Though Dad and Sis never got to see my home, I hope one day it will also be filled with their song of their presence.
If he hated the impossible, then he made that clock work again.
Sure.
Because somebody told him that it was broken for good. And he's probably like, "No, it's not."
Yep.
So that's really interesting.
Just like, you can't host a podcast when you're dead.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Right.
We'll make it happen.
Who knows what'll be around by the time we die.
Yeah, that's very true. But I love that story. It's very interesting. And it's kind of an example of what we were just talking about, too. About, you know, people needing something to do on mm-hmm. the other side. And still maintaining the same personality that they had when they were alive over there. And the same sort of ambition and the same sort of, you know, tenacity to want to get things done and do things this way or that way. Mm-hmm. Why would that necessarily change on the other side?
I don't know.
Sometimes we just get this preconceived notion that, oh, you know, we're dead and now we have a superpower or this or that. And I think a lot of it's like, it's not that different. I mean, it's a different plane. It's a different set of physical rules of, mm-hmm. of what will and won't work. But I think sometimes our consciousness and our interest and our desire to do things and who we are doesn't necessarily change.
Right.
All that much. Right. Except we just have to kind of learn to play by the other rules and find different ways of occupying our interests. You know, interests may stay the same, but the way that we exercise those may change. Mm-hmm. So interesting story. Thank you so much for sharing that one with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to another caller. Hi, you are on the air.
Hey, Tony. My name is Bryson. I love your show. So I am actually originally from San Diego. And while I've had some experiences in my life prior to the one I'm going to talk about today, this one was pretty much the most startling. So here we go. So I graduated high school in 2007 and shortly after attended college up north from San Diego here in a place called Cal State Monterey Bay. Cal State Monterey Bay basically took over the footprint of what used to be a U.S. Army base or fort, Ord, after the 1990s and 1980s decommissioning of a lot of bases. So what the college did is they took over that footprint, and the barracks became dorms and so on and so forth going from there. when I started there, I had a single occupancy dorm room. And the unique part was I shared a bathroom with a double occupancy room. The two guys I lived next door to lived closer down to me here in Southern California. So we, you know, talk a lot and had a lot of familiar things. The one thing that was unique, though, is sometimes they would come through the bathroom late at night and play pranks on me. So normally what I would do is I would lock my side of the bathroom door just so they wouldn't wake me up. When this story took place, they were actually back home in Orange County. So they were not involved in this. But what happened was one night I was up late studying and finally decided to go to bed. I did my normal routine of locking my front or my dorm room door along with the bathroom door. And got into bed, started to fall asleep, finally fell asleep. About maybe 2 or 3 hours later, I woke up, startled, didn't really know what was going on, and kind of, just confused. As my eyes started to adjust, I was looking forward off my bed towards my front door, and I noticed that there was a dark, shadowy, what I would call a figure, in between the bathroom and, door to my dorm. Just kind of kept looking at it, didn't really know what was going on. Not at that point, I didn't feel terrified or anything like that. Was more concerned that there was someone in my room than this being anything else. And then shortly thereafter, after about 30 seconds, it moved past the bathroom door, which would be, if you're looking forward, it would have been on the left. It moved past the bathroom door to the wall and started, the only way I can describe it is creeping along the wall as if it was a ninja towards me. Almost as though I could see a hand or arm-like appendage moving towards me along the wall, and then the rest of the body slinking behind it. So started doing this, and that wall between the bathroom door and the space to my bed, there's about, I would say, maybe 10 feet, 12 feet. As it started to do this, I figured, oh my God, there's someone in here that's going to try and hurt me. So I reached my hand under my bed to grab a golf club that was there, and I held my hand on my golf club. And my plan was, once this thing or person got to the end of the wall, it would bump into my bike, which I kept there. Once it bumped into my bike, I would spring up out of bed and, hit it or do something. And just basically at that point, fight for my life, I thought. So I was holding on to the golf club. It's moving along the wall, and it gets to the bike, and of course it proceeds to go through the bike. I immediately let go of the golf club and fell back into bed. It then came completely off the wall and came towards my bed even further. It got to the my bedpost, and I, again, those appendages, reached onto the post and propped it up and over towards me. At this point, I basically acted like a kid. I shut my eyes and, hoped that this thing was going to go away. And I kept them shut. And then I heard the noise over on my desk of what sounded like paper shuffling. And that's when I opened my eyes and the thing was gone, but I could see paper shuffling on my desk. I sprang up out of bed, turned the lights on, the paper stopped shuffling, and I kind of just stood there in disbelief for a long time. I would say 5 or 6 minutes, just kind of like looking around and just not understanding and just, just being confused. I decided at that point that I wasn't going to sleep the rest of the night. I didn't want to attempt it any further. So I proceeded to get a cup of coffee and turn my computer back on and try to do some other stuff. I didn't see anything like that after that. However, about once a week, I would wake up later in the night to paper shuffling around. So that was something that kept reoccurring. The odd thing was that after I moved out of that dorm room to move to a dorm room with my friend, I stored some of my stuff in a friend's room, and he would start hearing noises late at night around the same time that I would, coming from where my stuff was, where he was keeping it. So I often wondered, you know, was there something to do with me, or was there something to do with the history of that college? I do have other stories around that college, and I'll call in and share them. But again, love the show. Just finally had a place to tell this story that, you know, people would listen to and not think I'm 100% crazy. But yeah.
Thank you for calling and sharing that experience with us.
I think I would start trying to narrow it down to what it was that you stored in your friend's closet, because if it moved with that stuff, then that tells me it has something to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it could be the environment playing a role, like the mixture of that item being in that environment could be stirring something up. But I think that, you know, that's very interesting that once the items moved, that so did the activity.
You think there's ever objects that are haunted that are activated by the environment that they're in, where they can sit dormant forever in somebody's house or at an antique store, and then when put into the right environment, the right house, when it's purchased or moved, that then suddenly it's like, ooh, it's activated. Almost like, you know, epoxy. Where, you know, you have to have the two, like the one tube of epoxy by itself doesn't do shit, and neither does the other one. But when you mix the two together, then suddenly it's like this magical sticky shit that will, you know, weld your hands together.
Sure.
Do you think there's things like that where it's like, you need the second ingredient to activate it? It's like the activator is an environment. The activator is a person. The activator is a house, a setting, a mood, a attitude, a positivity, negativity, whatever it may be around a certain environment for the object's things to come out.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it, but I would think that would probably happen at some, you know, in some cases.
And I would think it could almost happen in any type of environment. I don't think that would just be attributed to negative only, where it's like, okay, well, this object sat in a abusive household for most of its life and it was just surrounded by negativity and horribleness, and then it goes to an antique store and nothing happens, and then it goes to another house and it's an abusive, negative, shitty household, and then it's like triggers itself to come mm-hmm. back out. I think you can have the same thing too with like grandmother's set of china, and let's say it was in a happy setting and it was loving and caring and it really wasn't bad, but it goes to the antique store, it's dormant, and then it gets to a house where it's loved again, and the positivity and the energy, and maybe if there's something to attach to, it comes back out because it feels more welcome. It's like similar breeds similar.
I think a perfect example of this is the Titanic Museum.
Okay.
Where those items probably are not very active when they are alone outside of a museum in storage, but when you put them together on a replica of a ship,
yeah,
then you get a shitload of activity.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're onto something with that theory.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with how sometimes an object can, you know, somebody can have it forever and nothing happens. And I think that can be the case with haunted houses, too, mm-hmm. where the environment certainly changes with those who inhabit the house. Mm-hmm. And you can go for years with nothing happening in that house because the environment, the energy in that house just doesn't breed or doesn't create the right place for it to, you know, to grow. You know, it's like mold.
Yeah.
Like if you have no air conditioning or heat and it's a humid day, eventually mold will start growing in your home. Mm-hmm. But if you have it maintained at a certain level, you're not going to have any mold.
Right.
And it could be good or bad. I think it can work in either direction. More often, I think we end up hearing about the negative because that ends up standing out more, makes people want to talk about it more. And I think sometimes the positivity type things might be overlooked almost because it's like, oh, things are just going so good. And isn't it weird that everything works out this way in this good, positive way? And it's like, well, maybe there's something to that.
Sure.
Where there's something else intervening. And it's not just your great luck. It's mm-hmm. that is breeding and it's creating this atmosphere where other things are happening that you are unaware of. Mm-hmm. So Interesting call, interesting story. Thank you for sharing that with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. If you like the show and you're sitting there going, I need more of this. I want to just binge on ghost stories forever and not listen to anything else. Well, what do I have something for you? It's an EPP membership, extra podcast person. That's a supporter of our program. You sign up at ghostpodcast.com. Or if you prefer Patreon, another platform, same content there, patreon.com/realghoststories. $5 a month gets you access to literally thousands of episodes of our program, commercial free, our EPP bonus episodes, advanced episodes, archived episodes. You also get our ebook, our audiobook, and so many extras. You can even do an annual membership and get 1 month free. Sign up. ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. It'll be the best $5 you've spent in the year 2020. Check it out and help keep us on the air. Until next time, for Jenny and all of us at Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.